My name is Lance Birch. I'm one of the pastors here at Reality Church. Really glad you guys made the choice to be here today. We are going to be baptizing at the end of this service. All of a sudden, that sounded like the monster at the end of this book. I don't know. It's just like some of you guys might get nervous about that. Like, is it going to be me? Am I going to be baptized? Possibly. It may be you. If you believed in the gospel, how about the gospel according to Tupperware? Wasn't that cool? That was amazing. So if that was you and you believe today, then listen, we've got everything you need. We've got t-shirts, we've got stuff for you to wear, shorts and t-shirt, and we'll help you out, and you can come around here and during the last song, and we will get you everything you need, and we will celebrate like reality does when you follow Jesus in baptism. We are on week 3 of a series called Better. And the reason we're doing better is because we looked at the book of Hebrews, and basically the whole concept of the book of Hebrews is that Jesus is better. What do you have? You know, whatever it is, Jesus is better. You got religion, Jesus is better. You got, you know, this addiction, Jesus is way better. You got this struggle, Jesus is better. You got this plan, you got this dream, whatever it is, Jesus is better. And that's the whole point of the book of Hebrews. But it seems like everybody has a better idea than Jesus. When you bring up Jesus in conversation, a lot of times the response that people will give you is like, yeah, you know, I tried Jesus, or I tried going to church, and I don't like hanging out with church people, or I don't want to do that again. I've already tried it. I got a better idea. I'm going to be spiritual, or I've got this plan, or I'm going to do this thing. Everybody has a better idea than Jesus. Week 1 we said, well, maybe everybody does have a better idea than Jesus, but Jesus is better than an idea. He's a person. And he's pursuing you. I want you to know that. I don't know your story. I don't know where you've been. I don't know what you've done. I know this about you. Jesus is pursuing you. That might scare you a little bit, but wait. Because it might scare you because, you know, we talked about how obsession with Jesus is healthy, but most of us are obsessed with something else. And we think that it's going to fill us up. We think that it's going to meet our needs. We've got a dream. We've got, if I just earn this much money, then we'll be happy. If I just move to this location, then we'll be happy. If I just leave this person and marry that person, then I'm going to be. Everybody's got a better idea than Jesus. And I think it's a lot of it is because we are not very self-aware. We actually think the problem exists outside of us, right? I think that way, and sometimes you get these wake-up calls about who the problem really is. How many of you guys were ever called to the principal's office? Was it just me? I was called, like I would be sitting in class thinking everything's cool, and then I hear it over the intercom, would Lance Birch please come to the office immediately? And immediately I think, oh, so everything that I thought was cool, I'm not very self-aware. Turns out my teachers, you know, didn't think I was the top student or I was making problems, and I don't know where that came from, you know. It's a mystery to me. Has the boss ever walked to your cubicle or your office or just walked up to you and say, hey, when you get a sec, can you come by my office? We need to talk. Doesn't that just fill you with joy when that happens? Just, woo, all right. Get to talk with the boss. Tell him what's up. Have you ever stood before a judge? I have. I stood before a judge. I'm a great driver. And I know that. And I know that because I tell myself that all the time. And I tell other people around me that I'm a great driver. But I had this moment of clarity. I was rushing back to the church office to meet with some people who were out of town guests. They were coming to eat lunch with me. I was in Maryland, and there was a little two-lane road. I was pulling out of the parking lot, and I said, man, I just got to get there. I got to get there really fast. And I pulled out, and there was a car coming. And they saw me, I saw them, our eyes locked. You know, it's like, we're not going to be able to avoid this, are we? And dude just hit me right in the side of my car. Totally my fault. The ambulance showed up. I denied treatment because I'm tough like that. Eventually developed frozen shoulder. You guys ever had that? I couldn't even move my arm like this. But then, now look at that. Huh? All right, it was a long time ago, but thank you for the applause. I appreciate that. Stood before the judge in Maryland. Now, the reason I went to court was not because I was going to plead innocent. The reason I stood before this judge was not so that I could be heard, so that my story could get out there. Because when she asked me, okay, Mr. Birch, what do you plead? My immediate plea was totally guilty, like 100%. I think I said 100% guilty. And she said, okay, what happened? I said, I gave this person no opportunity to stop. They hit me, of course. They hit me. I'm not here to say that I didn't do it. What was I there for? Why was I standing before this judge? A couple of reasons. I didn't want her to put points on my insurance. You guys familiar with that? I didn't want that. But what was I looking? Was I looking for justice? No. I was looking for mercy. I was hoping that she would go, "Ah, but look at him. He's adorable. He's a horrible driver, but you know. But the guy doesn't have any hair, so let's give him a break." I wasn't guilty. I wasn't looking to be heard. I was just looking for some mercy. And I became self-aware. Because when I drive, everybody's a bad driver. When I'm a very legalistic driver. Everybody's either driving too fast or too slow, or they're not using their turn signal when they're changing lanes, or they don't know to pull into the near lane when they're taking a right turn. They pull into the far lane. They don't know the zipper method of getting out of a parking lot. People in their driving. You know what? It became totally clear to me that I was the bad driver. I pulled out in front of this guy. Sure, I had a reason, but doesn't everybody have a reason? It was a moment of clarity for me. And so I wonder if you're self-aware. Have you ever had that moment of clarity? Well, let me just give you a little toolbox for you. If your life is always in turmoil, if your life is drama after drama after drama, after crisis after crisis, if you've always got somebody that you're about to fire off a mean email to, if you're always reading the comment sections behind, underneath the news stories, and you're writing in there, then if every one of your friendships ends negatively, if you're a boss and you fired 9 people, if you, you know, if every time you go to a restaurant, you've got a horror story about the service, then, maybe it's you. Maybe it's you. So, and when you see that, when you get that moment of clarity, it's not fun. When you look in the mirror and you don't like what you see, when you go to church and you hear a sermon and you go, "That's about me," the temptation for most people is to run. That's our temptation. To run from what? To run from accountability, to run from the consequences, to run from that relationship. Most people leave relationships not because of the way they feel about that person, but because of the way they feel about themselves when they're around that person. You remind me of my failure, I'm running. You remind me of how I messed up. When I look at you, even though maybe you've even forgiven me, I'm running away from you. We run because when we get the inside look, when we really look and we're honest about it, I don't think I've met anybody that took an honest inside look at what's going on in their heart and liked what they saw. And in that moment, two things can happen, whether it's in your car late at night or when the editor, you know, leaves the desk and you start saying things to yourself that you don't normally say during the day. When you come face to face with that, a lot of us have this tendency to believe this. Well, okay, if that's who I am, and that's who God is, then I better run. If God's that good and I'm this pile of mess, then I better run from God. Because if he's that good and he's that holy, then he must be opposed to me. He must be against me. And if that's true, it's only a matter of time before he just squishes me, before he just destroys me. He's got all this power. I'm a mess. You had better, we had better, if this is true, if that's who God is, then we'd all better run. We'd all better get away because God wants to destroy us and it's only a matter of time before that happens. Well, this group of Jewish believers that the book of Hebrews was written to found themselves in that sort of situation. They believed in Jesus. By the way, they were true Christians. Hebrews was written to a group of true believers. But life got tough for them. And they saw a side of themselves that they didn't really want to see. The side that wants to quit. So they believed in Jesus, they believed in the cross, they believed that Jesus' blood covered their sins, they made that public profession. These are Jewish believers probably living in the city of Rome, and things are getting rough for them, they're getting persecuted. And before we're too hard on them, well, let me define what the persecution was. They were getting their property confiscated, their land, their stuff, they were losing their jobs, they were losing their friends, they were getting mocked. And things were about to get worse. This was about 65 AD. And so Nero was coming into power. And things were going to get really horrific for these believers. And they were tempted to quit. The ones who were true believers. They believed in Jesus. And they saw the ugly side of their life that was not obsessed with Jesus. Instead, it was obsessed with other things like, how do I keep myself alive? How do I keep my stuff? How do I keep my reputation in the community? And the only way that they could see was to turn away from Christianity and to go back to their faith, go back to their Jewish faith, go back to the sacrificial system, go back to all of that. And guys, that had to mess with them internally. It's like when you are doing something that you know is not the right thing to do, but you find yourself drawn to it. And in that moment, when you get that ugly inside look, we're all, you are, I am, we're just tempted to run. And that's what they were doing. So that's, we're going to take a look at a very complicated section of Scripture. And we're going to look at three sections. And this is the writer of Hebrews saying, hey, the old system that you're tempted to go back to, that old way of doing things, it's flawed. Jesus is better than the system of the high priest. So take your Bibles, turn to Hebrews 4. I am going to be talking about some weird stuff today. So, I don't know, buckle your seatbelts, I guess. Hebrews 4. So the writer is going on, so then, the reason he says so then is because there's a lot of stuff that went before this. Jesus created everything. He's the Son of God. God called him, made him our high priest and an apostle. And that's the very end of chapter 3, I think. So then, since we have a great high priest who has entered heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to what we believe. Now, the reason he's saying this is he's saying, in your version it might say, passed through heaven, is because the high priest, let me define high priest a little bit, he's not just somebody that wears a funny hat, and there's not a bunch of incantations and mystery around the high priest. The high priest in Israel was a very real person. Everybody knew him. It was about lineage. They were a Levite from the tribe of Aaron through Levi. These were guys that were called by God to be the high priest. And they would serve. And the way they would serve is they would sacrifice animals. That was the system. People messed up and they would sacrifice animals to cover their sin. They had a few other things that they would do. On the Day of Atonement, two goats would be offered up for sacrifice. One of them would be slaughtered, and the blood would be sprinkled over the Ark of the Covenant, and as the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies. The other goat would be brought out, and the priest would lay his hands on this goat, and the sins of everybody would be placed on that goat, and then he'd slap it, and it would run off into the wilderness. Weird, huh? Look it up. It's true. And that's where we get scapegoat. That is a scapegoat. I'm serious. I'm really not even kidding. That's where we get scapegoat. All of the junk gets put on that goat and just get out of here. We're through with you. So the high priest was a man, and he would do on the Day of Atonement, he would enter into the Holy of Holies, could only enter the Holy of Holies one time a year, and even then they would tie a rope around his ankle. Because if he died or even just, you know, kind of had medical issues, nobody could go in there and help him. So they had to pull him out by the rope. I mean, that must have been, you know, hope you're going to do all right, Bill, you know. And it must have been a weird conversation. But no, this is actually way heavier than that. He's going in there to the place where God resides, the throne of God. And he couldn't go in there without the blood of this goat that he was sacrificing. He sprinkled it over the Ark of the Covenant. And make atonement that day for the sins of the whole nation. Yom Kippur is the holiday, but that's the Day of Atonement. And That's what the high priest did. Now, the writer of Hebrews is saying, well, look, we've got a great high priest who has entered heaven. He didn't just pass through that curtain in that little temple that we've got in Jerusalem. He passed through heaven. Did you guys know, and maybe you don't, I didn't know this for a long time, everything that you see in the Old Testament, it points towards what Jesus Christ is going to do. And so the temple that they had in Jerusalem was kind of like this copy, shadow of the reality in heaven. And Jesus goes to the Holy of Holies, the real Holy of Holies, where God resides on his throne in heaven. So Jesus is a great high priest. He entered heaven, Jesus the Son of God. So what? So don't quit. Don't quit. Yeah, but he's a high priest. He's God. He's perfect. He's got to be against us. No, the writer goes on, this high priest of ours understands our weaknesses, for he faced all of the same testings we do, yet he did not sin. Did you know that about Jesus? I think we say that sometimes. You know, Jesus was tempted in every way. But do we know what that means? What does it mean when you're tempted? Doesn't it mean that there's a little piece of you that wants to do that thing? When you say all those donuts are tempting, you're not saying I'm repulsed by those donuts, are you? You're saying I sort of want to eat that donut. Jesus faced temptations. Now, he didn't do it the same way we did because he didn't sin, but he faced temptation. You need to know that Jesus was in touch with your temptations. That means that there was a piece of him that wanted to do that. The writer here specifically is talking about the Garden of Gethsemane. The night that Jesus was arrested, he prayed in a garden. And at that point, he prayed, God, if there's any way, let this cup pass from me. Basically, what he's saying is, I am tempted to quit. I am looking at this suffering. And do you guys know how bad the suffering was? Here's somebody who's never sinned, and all of the junk of everybody is going to be poured on him. Every vile thing that you can think of, he's going to identify with that. He's going to own that. It's going to be his label instead of yours. He's looking at that. He's going, I want to quit. There's a piece of me that wants to quit. God, we've always existed in perfect community. God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit. I've never had a broken relationship in my life, and this thing is going to be severed because of sin. I'm going to be cut off. I'm tempted to quit. I'm tempted to give up. I'm tempted to just, let's just end this. And he could have done it, and nobody would have ever been around to condemn him for it. He could have squished the whole thing. He could have said, bring your angels. He could have said, let's do a do-over. Let's start this thing over. Nobody would be there to condemn him. But he finishes his prayer differently than we finish ours, usually. He says, but God, not my will, your will. Father, I've got some wants here. I've got some things that I want to have happen. But the important part for you to know is that he gets it. Jesus, when he looks at your weaknesses, doesn't look at those weaknesses from some sort of pedestal where he goes, I can't even identify with that. You know what he says to you? I get it. Me too. I was there. I made a different decision than you. Consistently and forever, I made a different decision. You know what though? I get it. I get it. Did you know that about Jesus? That's the kind of high priest you have. When he looks at you, he goes, you know what, I get it. He's not looking down at you going, you just disgust me. He gets it. So, the high priest of ours understands our weaknesses, for he faced all the same testings as we do, yet he did not sin. He never sinned. He was morally perfect. So let us, because we have that kind of high priest, let us come boldly to the throne of our gracious God. There we will receive his mercy, and we will find grace to help us when we need it the most. And that's usually when we run. When we need God the most. When we've really royally messed up. When our marriage is on the rocks. When the whole thing, when our addictions have gotten the best of us. When our struggle is just like we can't win. When all of our relationships are fragmented, isn't that the time that we avoid God the most? We don't. I don't want to go to church. I know what those people are going to say. I know what the Bible says. I know how God feels about me. He's disgusted with me. He doesn't want to be around me, and so I don't want to be around him. I'm going to run. Run away. I don't want to go to a life group. Are you kidding me? They're going to ask me to be authentic. I'm going to be authentic, and then they're all going to reject me. I don't want this. I don't need this. I'm going to run. But the writer here says, look, because we have this kind of high priest, the kind of high priest that looks at us and says, I get it. And they were very familiar with this sort of high priest. They knew when they went there to their own high priest that he was a sinner. This man, listen to this. It's in Hebrews 5. Every high priest is a man chosen to represent other people in their dealings with God. He presents their gifts to God, offers sacrifice for their sins, and he's able to deal gently with ignorant and wayward people. That's you and me, but it's us. With ignorant and wayward, this is just the man high priest. This is not Jesus. He's able to deal with them gently because he himself is subject to their same weaknesses. When the high priest would listen to people, and they would come to him. This happens to me often in counseling. Someone sits down across from me and they say, you know what my problem is? I'm just selfish and arrogant. And I go, you know, what am I supposed to say at that point? Like, yeah, man, you are. Basically what's going on in my own mind and my own heart is, God, why are you doing this? Why do you have this person as a mirror right in front of me to show me what my issues are? Ever felt that way in life groups where somebody's just saying, I don't even know that I should share this, but, and they go on and they share what's really going on in their life, and far from saying, holy cow, you are really, really bad, you're going, whew, it's not just me. God's dealing with me on this. So the high priest, when people would come to him and they would say their stuff, you know, this is what's going on, I need to sacrifice this animal for this junk in my life, the high priest would deal really gently with them because the high priest had that same junk. He wasn't a superhero. He was just a normal man. So when he presented their sacrifices, he had to present a sacrifice for himself. That is why he must offer sacrifices for his own sins as well as theirs. Jesus didn't have to do that. He never had to sacrifice for his own sins. He never committed a sin. So we have a greater high priest. Now, if you're a Bible scholar, or maybe you've read a lot of the Bible, you might think, wasn't the priesthood that God established way back, wasn't it through the tribe of Levi? And wasn't it through Aaron, Moses' brother, that Levi came? And Jesus is not from the tribe of Levi. He's from the tribe of Judah. And so you go, well, what in the world? How did he become a priest? Well, that's where it gets interesting, and this is where the writer of Hebrews throws us a curveball, okay? Hebrews 5:6 says, and it's quoting David in Psalm 110, when David kind of talks prophetically about Jesus to come, he says, and in another passage, God said to him, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. Melchizedek. Right? You guys just did a study probably on Melchizedek, right? You're just always reading up on Melchizedek. What are you talking about? Melchizedek is mentioned 3 times in the Bible, and this is one of them. Where in the world is the writer of Hebrews coming up with this stuff? Well, he's coming up with it from a story from Genesis 14. I will tell it pretty quickly. You're probably going to have questions, and you're going to want to rush over there to the Q&A right after this service and ask me all sorts of questions, and that will make me feel awesome. So do that. But here's the story. Abram, who was told by God, hey, leave where you're at, go somewhere else, and his nephew Lot and some families, they all got together, and they were going to what was eventually going to be the Promised Land, and they were having struggles with people. In fact, Lot and the king of Sodom, because Lot lived in Sodom, they were attacked. Basically, 5 kings got together and said, let's go attack Sodom. And when I say king, by the way, in the Old Testament, these were basically mayors of pretty large towns. Although they were like dictators, but they weren't, don't think of a king of a whole kingdom. They had these kings and they would gather together, lock arms and say, let's go get Sodom. And they did. And they captured Lot and they captured the king of Sodom. And Abram said, well, that's not going to do. My nephew's over there. I'm going to rescue him. So he did. He gathered an army of not very many people, and they went over there, and they beat him, and they rescued the king of Sodom, and they rescued Lot. And on their way back to their land, a king named Melchizedek came out. Now, Melchizedek means king of righteousness. Melke is like king, Zedek is like righteousness. And he was also the king of Salem, which means king of righteousness, and Salem means peace. So he was the king of righteousness, and he was the king of peace. We don't know where he came from. Total mystery man. Total mystery, mystery Mel. We don't know who he is, where he came from. In fact, the writer of Hebrews says, as far as we know, no mom, no dad, no genealogy, no date of death. We don't know anything about this guy, but he blesses Abram. And then Abram turns around and gives him a tenth of everything that he had just won from these kings. Gave him a tenth. And through that, Melchizedek was showing that he's greater than the priesthood of Levi. Why? Because Levi, okay, here's where it gets a little interesting. Because Levi was in Abram at the time. You guys know how this whole thing works, right? I don't need to go any further than that. But Melchizedek was shown to be superior. That priesthood was shown to be superior to the priesthood of Levi, which was going to come on later on through a bunch of other, you know, family, you know. Okay, you get it. But anyway, that's Melchizedek. If you have any questions about that, because this is a short time that I have with you, please ask me that. But there's Melchizedek. And who is he? Why is he mentioned in the Bible? Some people think that Melchizedek was a Christophany. Say that with me. Christophany. Okay, this is a new word maybe for you. That's basically an appearance of Jesus in the Old Testament. Some people think it was Shem, one of Noah's sons. Some people think it was a type of Christ. I kind of lean toward that, but I'm not going to argue if you agree with one of the others. A type of Christ basically means, remember how I said the temple was like a type of what's going on in heaven? Well, Melchizedek is like a shadow of Jesus to come later on. The shadow of the reality to come. That's what Colossians 2:17 says, that a lot of the stuff that we study in the Old Testament was a shadow of the reality to come, and the reality itself is Jesus Christ. So he says he didn't have parents, as far as we know he didn't die, and therefore he became like Jesus to us. So that's Melchizedek. That's how Jesus is both a priest and a king, because 1,000 years after that Abram story, David in Psalm 110 says, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. So, now, Hebrews 7 finishes off the argument. Now, unlike those other high priests, he doesn't need to offer sacrifices every day. They did this for their own sins first and then for the people. But Jesus did this once and for all when he offered himself as the sacrifice for people's sins. Jesus' blood is better, his sacrifice is better, his priesthood is better, his kingship is better, his lordship is better, he's just better. And that's what this writer's trying, don't go back, hold firmly, grasp on, don't turn back, because whatever you're turning back to is like, my dad, when I was growing up, wanted to be like a ham radio operator, and he had to learn Morse code in order to do it. Anybody familiar with this? Like, you could talk all over the world. Like, you have to do the dials and everything, and like, you know, you're like, who is this? And like, I'm in Anchorage, Alaska. It's like, I'm talking to somebody in Anchorage, Alaska, or I'm in Guam. And like, you have to do these dials, and you talk into the microphone. And today we have something called the internet. And we don't have to do that anymore, right? It's better. You know, you're immediately connected with the entire, basically, the difference between that priesthood and the Old Testament is that, okay? It's like total accessibility. All the high priests were doing was basically illustrating the barrier between God and man. They were showing physically this big curtain, the barrier between God and man. And what does Jesus do? He says their sacrifices were a symbol. They were a shadow of what's to come. I'm here, and far from showing you the barrier, I'm tearing it down. Through my life, my burial, my resurrection, I'm tearing down all barriers between you and God. I'm removing the barriers between you and your Father. If you believe in him, then you get adopted into his family. So the system was set up as a barrier. Jesus came along to give a better sacrifice, better blood, removing barriers. The law appointed the high priest who were limited by human weakness. But after the law was given, God appointed his son with an oath. And his son has been made the perfect high priest forever. Made the perfect high priest. The reason that's said that way is because Jesus was morally perfect forever, but he was made perfect through suffering. Did you know that? Maybe that would change our whole feeling about what Christianity is about. Christianity is not about making you comfortable. Christianity is about, through obedience, and how do we learn obedience? Through suffering, is about making us look like Jesus. And we can't just avoid what Jesus didn't avoid. He didn't avoid the suffering. He was morally perfect forever, but he wasn't ready to be our high priest until he was in touch with our weakness, in touch with suffering. So he was made perfect to be our high priest, perfected by suffering, specifically in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he sweat drops of blood because of what he was about to face. That's the kind of high priest we have. That's the high priest that right now is seated at the right hand of God. And every time you screw up, and every time you mess up, and every time you're a jerk, and every time you're not self-aware, Jesus turns to God and says, you know, when you look at them, here's what I want you to remember. They're mine. They belong to me. When you look at them, I want you to see my life. The righteousness of our high priest has been, I'm going to use a Bible word here, it's a theology word, imputed to us. When God looks at us, he sees the righteousness of our high priest. That's why you can stand before the judge and you can say, I'm not here to argue my case. I am not here to smoke screen you. I am not here to tell you that I didn't really do it. Guilty. But I brought my friend and he has something he wants to say too. And that's when Jesus speaks up. So, guys, when you have that moment of clarity and you see that junk and you feel like running, do it. Run. When you feel like running, do it. Just run in the opposite direction that you normally do. Run to your high priest. Run to Jesus. I tried this in the last service, but it just proves that I'm old. Pull a Costanza. Do the opposite of what you think you would normally do. And run to your father. And run to the judge. But you've got a high priest there. So when do you do this? Well, during your 15. I know you guys have been carving out 15 minutes of your day to obsess, concentrated time with Jesus. I want you to change your prayers because God already knows. He know. Did you know that? Sometimes when I pray, I try to smoke screen God. I try to formulate these things. It's like, God, you know I want to live 100% for you. And I think he just calls a timeout. What? Time out, Lance. 100%? Really? 100% for me? The most you've ever done is like 78%, and that was like at a revival, okay? So you still need Jesus, all right? Did you know that you still need Jesus? Really, you do. He's arguing on your behalf right now. So tell the truth. We don't because we don't know how much he's for us. And a move towards God at the moment of sin is the most unnatural act that you will ever do. It just feels like the worst thing. It's like, I just messed up. Now you want me to run to Jesus? Absolutely, I want you to run to Jesus. Your high priest. Jesus has been with us in our humanness, and he invites us to be with him at the throne of grace. He invites us to come in. Nobody has to tie a rope around our ankle. We're going to make it because he's got this. He gets you. And he's got this. So when you feel like running, do it. Seeing Jesus as for you, maybe you've heard that for the first time. What a huge difference. A God that you can run to when you mess up, when you're struggling, in the middle of your struggle, when you've let people down, knowing that there's someone on your side, someone bent on advocating for you. So I want you to run, but I want you to run to him. Think for a second, how could that change your prayer life? If you just got honest with God in prayer, how much would that change your prayer life? Instead of trying to, you know, think up something spiritual to say. Just you and God and a bunch of honesty. Not relying on your effort, not relying on your resources, but trusting in Him totally, your high priest. Trusting in His once and for all sacrifice. If that's you today, and for the first time you've understood that Jesus is for you, that He's not waiting and wanting to punish you, but He's waiting and wanting to show you His grace, and you believe that, then hey, take one of those cards and say, I believe. Go out back and right back there, there's a ton of people that will help you, and you can be baptized today. You can tell people, hey, look, I want to follow Jesus. That would be an amazing testimony of what God did for you today. Also, we've got an amazing chance over the next week, over the weekend next, to show the world what that grace looks like in real terms. We're going to go out into the community with Big Live, partnering with all kinds of nonprofits, and I would like to pray for two things. Number one, that during this song, some of you guys will decide, today's my day to be baptized. Today's my day to make that step. And also for those who are going out to the community and making an eternal impact, if you're a part of the Big Live, would you just please stand so that we can pray for you? If you're a part of the Big Live in any way, if you're going to be at any work site, then please stand and let's pray about that. Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. So join me in prayer.